Keep up to date with the latest content through social media. Type in the search bars of Instagram, Getter, Truth Social, and TikTok, mainly those first three of Instagram, Getter, or Truth Social, Kenjin_Express, I repeat, Kenjin_Express, spell the word engine, then put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get Kenjin, one word, _Express. You can also follow this show on Facebook just by typing in the search bar of Taboo Topic. Look for the logo that says Honesty Equals Understanding. You can listen to this show on any platform from Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, and even Amazon, which, by the way, please don't forget to give this show a rating and review. If it's anything less than a 5-star, let me know so I can better serve you. Last but not least, you can find the inspirations for the Wednesday's episodes on my Substack newsletters. Type in the URL at kenjin296.substack.com if you want a visual of the inspiration and you want that script to see what will the episode on Wednesday shall be focused on. Share this with your friends and family members, because here on this show, we dare to think out loud and question the narrative. Free speech triumphs safe space, because in order for us to think, we have to risk being offensive. If we want true peace in our society, we have to be able to be honest with each other, without judgment. If we can be honest with each other, then we can achieve real peace in our society. Amen. This is a reminder that the Biden administration abandoned 9,000 to 15,000 Americans in Afghanistan. Now, you won't hear about this from the media or any politician for that matter, because the global elite have their own agenda that disregards human life and basic human dignity. So, to the families and individuals that have been affected by this abandonment, know that you have not forgotten. Most Americans, like myself, know, or your loved ones, didn't choose to stay behind. If there's any way I can further help besides bring awareness, reach out at Kenjin_Express. I repeat, Kenjin_Express on Instagram. Spell the word engine, put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get Kenjin, one word, _Express, if you have by one in a millionth chance hear this message. It's not much, but know this, justice will be served for those who lied to justify their incompetence. After all, I believe in God, who is in control of all things, and he says, vengeance is mine. Now, let's get back to the show. Hello, everyone. I am Ken Drew, the host of Taboo Topic, joined by my co-host, Ryan from Between the Liars. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. How about yourself, Ken?
I am never better, always better, I should say. Is that a thing? I don't know. Anyways, it is now.
I think you had it right the first time. I think never better makes sense to me.
Never better. Same difference. Whatever. Folks, go ahead and comment down below and congratulate Ryan on his marriage. He is now a happily married man. The honeymoon phase has not started yet, but it shall begin once the semester ends, according to him.
Yeah, well, the honeymoon phase has started. I think that starts right at the start of the relationship. But the honeymoon itself hasn't because, well, I mean, we both got classes we're taking and teaching. So, unfortunately, couldn't get away at this time.
And it be like that sometimes.
Unfortunately, that it do be like that sometimes.
Yes, and folks, Ryan still exists in Between the Liars.
I know. Oh, man, it's barely. I did get to see Josh in person. We went to the University of Southern Mississippi's Hattiesburg Hub City Swing Tournament. Mm-hmm. And so I took my competitors down there. It was a 7-hour drive both ways, but I got to see Josh in person. He is alive. I am alive. he started his doctoral program, and I've started last year of my program where I'm writing my dissertation and first year faculty. So we got to hang out a little bit. I'll post a picture later this week if I can scrounge up some time. So we've just really shifted into prioritizing that. And then obviously, you know, this collaboration with Ken, that's been about the only thing I've touched with anything to do with our show, unfortunately.
Well, you are alive at least.
Yeah.
Since you're going to post a picture soon, go ahead and give a quick plug in for your show, if you wouldn't mind.
All right.
Well, remind people where they can find you at least.
Yeah, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. So if you want to catch the live stream versions of our shows, that is on YouTube's our normal schedule. And we'll pick this up again eventually. But what we strive for is on, Tuesday nights, you get the Bill Me segments with me. On Thursday nights, you would get the like the discussion actual between the liars content, and then on Fridays you get the blueprints with Ken.
Yep. So go ahead and check that out, folks. You can follow on any social media platform for Ryan at Between the Liars, literally just Between the Liars. Also, folks, go ahead and give credit to Devin Farley for the intro music. And also make sure you hit the like and subscribe button. Hit the notification bell to boost our self-esteem anyway. That would help us greatly for the to beat the algorithm. And with that said, folks, quick recap from last week. Last episode, I should say, because we didn't have an episode last week because Ryan was feeling a little sick.
Yeah.
Understandably so, though, considering like how busy you are and a lot of people and a lot of interaction. So a lot of germs being spread, I'm sure.
And it's cold and flu season and, you know.
Whoa. Shh. We don't talk about that anymore. We don't talk about the flu season. No, but anyway, Hoots, we did talk about the presidential pardon. And folks, Ryan and I talked about whether or not the president should have the power to pardon himself or political opponents. And what are some parameters we could come up with about it? So if you want to check that episode out, go ahead and check that out. But for this week in particular, we're going to finally move on from the executive branch because I'm sick and tired of the executive branch. And frankly, there's nothing else to talk about. So let's talk about something that's been more of another controversy, but it's become reinvigorated since the 2016 election cycle. So let's go ahead and set the scene here real quick. But Ryan, I don't know about you, but I think this debate has been, I don't know, as far as I can remember, it's always been a debate as far as electoral college versus popular vote. And that's really the gist of what's today's about. We're going to discuss whether that we at least believe that if the electoral college should stay as is, or we should get rid of, or at least as a whole anyway. And if we do believe it should stay as a whole, then we'll discuss a little bit about whether or not we think there should be some modifications. And if we do come up with that, that will be next week's episode. So by all means, come check us out next week as well on Friday when we talk about the possible modifications to the Electoral College system that we could come up with. But for this week, let's go ahead and discuss the Electoral College versus the popular vote. Again, I mean, since 2016 election cycle, it's been reinvigorated, the debate. And then during the 2020 election, conversations about voter ID, mainstream headlines. And so really the next month or so, really until the ratification process, guys, we're going to be talking a lot about the election. And it's actually kind of fitting because the midterms are coming up as well. So again, so at least for like this next quarter of the year, keep following us. Follow us on any social media platform because, again, we are going to be talking about a lot about issues that are really concerned for American people right now. So with that said, the Electoral College has been in debate since the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. Now, why does it exist? Well, the nuances of what happens during elections cannot be discussed until Americans understand why the Electoral College exists, and which is still being debated 234 years after its ratification, which is insane to imagine that even our founding fathers, we would think that a lot of the new, you would think like the points about for or against the Electoral College is new, but in reality, it's nothing new under the sun. Now, with that said, as of 2022, Ryan, 60% of Americans are in favor of abolishing the Electoral College altogether. Now, that is still lower than a poll taken in 1968 when 81% of Americans favored foregoing the Electoral College altogether. pretty crazy to think about. Congress has proposed over 700 bills since the Constitution was ratified to abolish the Electoral College. But why the pushback? Does it exist? And before I get to the why the pushback exists, I want to go ahead and read this real quick. It's called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, which basically more or less what it does is, let's go back to the 2016 election, right? Where Donald Trump won the Electoral College system with the electors, but he lost the popular vote. Let's say in a hypothetical scenario, Colorado went red. Because Trump lost the popular vote in this National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, if the state passes this measure, then the state would automatically vote. The electorals would be forced, you know, in theory anyway, be forced to vote for the electorate would be forced to vote for the popular vote winner. So Hillary Clinton would still get the 9-10 electorals from Colorado, despite the fact that Colorado went red, at least with the residents in the state. So that's the idea behind it. And 15 states have enacted this measure.
Wait, I'm confused. Back up for 1 second. Why? So in the 2016 election, if Donald Trump, you're saying because...
Let's say, okay, so like I said, if Colorado would have passed this measure and Colorado, let's say, hypothetically went red within the state itself, right?
Yeah.
But because they passed this measure, the electors have to vote based on the winner of the popular vote, right? National popular vote.
I see. So it's basically trying to overwrite the
electoral college
and premise of the electoral college altogether.
Right. And it's actually stripping away the voice of the people in the state itself.
Right.
And so 15 states, I should say, have enacted this. So states like Washington, Oregon, California, Colorado, New Mexico, Illinois, New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Jersey, Maryland, Delaware. You may think, well, Ken, that's all blue states. But let's imagine a state like Washington, where there's been the last two presidential election cycles, Trump actually did pretty well in a state like Washington that's been voting blue consistently since probably since the early 90s, I would say, right? And that was during the Reagan eras, where Reagan pretty much killed it in the election process, right? But let's say the next election cycle, is another scenario of like Trump versus Biden, and many people suspect that if that's the case, there's a good possibility that Trump may win. But let's say the people of Washington decide, you know what, we're done voting blue. Mm-hmm. Because the legislators voted to go ahead and pass this measure to where the electors have to vote on the candidate who has the most popular votes nationally, then the voice of the people of Washington gets stripped away,
right?
And that's electors that should have gone in theory to Trump, but instead is going to Biden, because again, this measure was passed to where the electors have to recognize the popular vote instead.
Yep.
Which,
yeah,
15 states have enacted that, pretty much weakening and, like I said, superseding the whole purpose of the electoral college system.
Well, and you said rightfully so that those are, I believe, exclusively blue states, right? New Mexico is considered a little bit more purple, and there was a few in there that might be borderline potentially. I mean, Washington, Oregon being two that, like you said, they were close, although they've consistently been blue. The other thing that's true about all of those states is that for the most part, they're either blue or they're high population or both. So for example, what the popular vote benefits is high population states. You will never see North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana pass a bill like this that would completely destroy their voice. I can't imagine that ever being the case, because the states that want this are California, New York, because what will happen is if we switch and we become a popular vote for the president, the flyover states will remain flyover states. Your voice will be irrelevant. Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, those will be the cities, Washington, D.C. They'll be the areas that determine elections. And while the criticisms of, voices that are not being quite as heard in the electoral process, that's true. We can talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's equally so that you're not going to fix the problem. It's not like now everyone has a voice. You just shift it. So that's what we call in debate a trade-off disadvantage, right? So you just have a different group of people. And of course, logically, the ones who are in favor of this type of a shift are the ones whose voices would carry more weight with this, right? So I think it's important that in addition to the observation that those are almost exclusively blue states, they're also almost exclusively high population states. Like Illinois is red outside of Chicago. Minnesota is red outside of Minneapolis and Duluth. New York. New York City, and I think I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe like Queens and some of the other more populous cities also. And that's just also a typical pattern in the U.S., your bluest areas are going to be the cities. And within the cities, the bluest of the bluest areas are going to be on your college campuses. When you get to more rural areas, they tend to favor more conservative ideals because a lot of those areas become farmland. And those people like the ideals that the candidates who tend to fall in line with the GOP tend to support. Now, you can find exceptions to that all over the place. But that if we're going with, you know, general trends, that's how that tends to be. So, I mean, I did want to just interject there real quick that it does favor the people who live in high populous areas. So it would follow that they would be in favor of something like that. But you won't see, you know, the farmlands of Illinois or North Dakota or South Dakota or Montana or Nebraska or Kansas voting for a population vote when their state becomes irrelevant because they don't have populations. Those states are known for agriculture or for something else that's not people-based.
And that's something, I think you touched on something as far as like the whole purpose of electoral college, right, is to protect the states with smaller populations and people. And let's go back to the founding fathers real quick. Like, you know, as far as like setting the stage for this episode, the electoral college was actually another compromise by the framers at the time. There were framers who wanted the popular vote, but concern arose from the idea that states with larger populations, as you alluded to, would have too much of an advantage over smaller states with smaller populations. Then there was like the aspect of a lack of education that would give some states a disadvantage. And lastly, southern states were worried about northern states having an amplified voice because of the scenario of slaves not being able to vote. Some were, but due to the compromise, they only counted as 3/5 of a vote. Thus, the Electoral College was born as a compromise. Right? That was my baby impression. Anyways, now with this system, people in the states have a direct vote on their preferred presidential candidates. So the popular vote still exists within the state itself. So let's say the people in California or the people in Florida, you know, they decide to vote for Rob DeSantis for presidential candidate over Joe Biden, right? Then the people in the popular vote would then go to the electors, and the electors have to vote based on the popular vote. That's the whole. So the popular vote still matters. Yep. It's just in more indirect way to have your voice heard. It's basically saying like, all right, so the people of Florida decide they want, you know, Rob DeSantis to be the president of the United States, whereas the people in Illinois, they want President Joe Biden to be the president of the United States. That's basically what the idea of the popular vote in the electoral college system is. And based on the amount of, and the electors anyway, they represent the population. So the amount of electors that represent each state is based off its population, the total number of the state representatives in the House plus 2 from the Senate. So Florida, for example, has 28 total representatives. Thus, if you add another 2 for the Senate, Florida gets 30 electors. Okay. Simple enough, right? Now, whoever has the most votes, votes as far as electors wins the presidency. So that's why you've had scenarios where, like I said, Trump in 2016, the most recent example, won the electoral college because of the electors, but lost the popular vote. Yep. And if you see a map from 2016, which I'll get to in just a second, but if you see the map, Trump pretty much like it was pretty much like a red wave. It was a sea of red as far as geographic. And I'm sure you've seen the map too as yourself. But Trump actually ended up winning 83% of the counties in 2016. He won 2,600 counties total compared to only 500 for Clinton. So again, in at least when it comes to, if you want to talk about majority rule, so let's even add the fact that Trump won 30 states that year in that 2016 election cycle. He won 30 states. He won the majority of the states. He won the majority of the precincts, and he won the majority of the electors as a result of that. If you would have just counted the popular vote would have come from big cities like Los Angeles, New York City, Miami, maybe Chicago. Now, if you're someone who is supporting of the national popular vote, I would ask you why that is. As I've asked that question when it came to the judicial branch, in the sense of, is it because your preferred candidate didn't win, or is it because you genuinely believe this is a this is the most fair system, in, as far as having a national popular vote? Because to me, Ryan, it's not fair if, let's say, again, 83% of the precincts that Trump won, or the counties, whatever, that Trump won in 2016, he won those, but because of the city like Los Angeles and New York City can pretty much like supersede everyone else's voice, Hillary Clinton would become the president in the scenario of a national popular vote.
And this is what I understand of the support of the popular vote. And that is that people think that it logically follows that if the most people want you to be president, then you should be president because you're supposed to be president of the people, right? And I think that what they forget is that there is a geographical protection that is being given through the Electoral College. Agree, disagree with it, that's a separate issue. But that is one of the purposes of it, is so that people who are farmers, who are spread out geographically because they need the farmland, they don't get their votes superseded just because a bunch of people decide to congregate in cities. It's to balance that out and make it so that candidates have to account for the farmers' opinions and for the people who do things like fracking and oil. Like at areas where you need more land, those people's voices are not just steamrolled by, you know, the fact that you have, what is it, like 8 million people in Chicago, whatever the population of Chicago is.
Maybe higher.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Point being, though, that I understand where they're coming from logically. If if they're saying you had the most votes, clearly you were the most popular, why does that just get overridden? And it really will come down to, do you think which voices need to be protected? And one of the main reasons that the Founding Fathers wanted to set up the Electoral College was to be sure that we didn't just have a true democracy vote for the president. We wanted multiple interests balanced as we did so. And that was kind of where this came from, at least just as I've understood it. So, like, I understand the logic behind it, but to me, it is more important that we balance out. If you're going to be the president, you're supposed to represent the interests of everyone across all of the United States, which also includes the flyover states, which means that, you know, when Joe Biden comes out and he proposes something very unpopular, like the banning of fracking in a swing state like Pennsylvania, happened to be in the last election, when that's where their livelihood comes from, these people are not going to vote for an unpopular policy in that area based off of, you know, the fact that it counts against their own interests. The same for farmlands. If, you know, Obama and Hillary and the other Democrats who have run, if they're looking at, you know, raising blanket taxes or, you know, raising the cost of whatever, that tends to down the road impact the interests of the farmers and what they can afford for their families and what it costs the American consumer for those goods, those people will not be interested in something like that. However, when it's an easier commodity to obtain in the city, they don't feel that same pain. So your values for your party, as well as what is important to you, so your priorities, are going to shift based off of where you live. And I believe that the Electoral College balances those better than the popular vote. Now, does it do it perfectly? No, absolutely not. I will not sit here and tell you that there are not flaws with the Electoral College. But I think that as we really start to dissect what are the flaws, the pros and cons of each of these approaches, I think that the Electoral College better balances that, so that if the premise of the president of the United States, and again, we've shifted, we've forgotten this, right? Like we talked about this with AK, we elect a king or a benevolent dictator or whatever you want to call it. We're voting for who we think will just pass things through executive order. We're not thinking about, hey, you're supposed to, at the top federal level, balance more people's opinions. And as you work your way down, you're supposed to get more aggressive and partisan, potentially, right? Yeah. And there's supposed to be more power delegated to those people. We've forgotten that. So it doesn't surprise me that that bleeds over into what we think should be the representation. It's like, oh, well, you're representing the people. It's like, well, yes, but you're also representing the areas. And if we do away with the Electoral College, I think that you start shifting away significantly from representing the areas, right? Because it's the people as well as it is the areas, because the areas, you know, it might not be a person who lives there, but your agriculture is there, which supports a person in another area indirectly.
Well, allow me to play devil's advocate, because I actually agree with everything you said. But I want to be fair to the national popular folks out there. So one of the main concerns as far as why we don't have the Electoral College was because there's going to be areas in the country where people just didn't have the resource to get a proper education, so they knew which candidate to vote and would say, well, as of right now, due to technology and the internet, everyone has access to this information. And so that's one aspect as far as why we don't need the popular vote anymore, to which you would say...
Can you restate that? Their argument before was that people would be ill-informed.
That was one of the reasons as far as going to full popular votes at the time, because of the fact that when the founding fathers wrote the Constitution, ratified it, there were going to be parts of the country that would not have the resources in it to get the education they need, so they knew like which candidate to vote on.
And so the end result was, we need a popular vote. That was their conclusion.
We need the Electoral College to protect the more uneducated folks out there.
Gotcha.
And so one would say, well, based on the technology and the internet today and the fact that everyone has to get an education anyway in today's times, overlaps, or that argument anyway, as far as needing the Electoral College in that aspect, has been outdated and a justification why we should move to the popular vote instead.
My answer to that is, go have a conversation with average people on the street. Go have a conversation with people at universities. We're not as smart as some of us would like to believe. Do you see those YouTube videos where it's like, hey, they've got this cash prize, and if you can answer these simple questions, it might be about the Constitution, it might be about geography, it might be about, you know, our interaction with other countries, but like, they're fairly basic questions, things that like the average Joe should know, and these people don't know. And it's supposed to be comedic, but it's also terrifying, right? And I would say, don't confuse being smart with being educated, right? So the fact that we have more people who go to school, there's a higher literacy rate, it doesn't mean that they understand how the government works. There's a significant chunk of people who would call themselves apolitical until it comes time to vote, and they have very strong opinions, and that's fine. You know, I believe that you should, you know, be able to vote for who you want, but just because you have access to information, I don't think that we've seen our society automatically get smarter because of that, because you've also had plenty of misinformation, right? You can find flat earth support groups. You can find people who still believe Elvis is alive. Like, you can find people who believe insert whatever crazy notion you want there. It doesn't mean just because we have access and technology doesn't mean people are also invested in politics. Like, you and I are an anomaly, right? I mean, and the people that we're surrounded with are also an anomaly. There are plenty of people who do not care about politics.
Right.
And then they just go off of whatever ad or whatever party they tend to affiliate with. They don't actually look at the candidates' platforms. And that was the entire reason I started the Bill Me segments, is because people are fed the talking points, but they don't dig into it. So I would say, if you want to be consistent and say we should now do the popular vote because people are so educated, then I would say, okay, great. Then I'm sure you wouldn't be opposed to setting a screening in motion to where if people didn't understand the basic fundamentals of how the government constitution is laid out, they don't get to vote. No one would be in favor of that because there'll be a large number of people who don't pass. So I would say, then apply that same logic. We're keeping the Electoral College to protect the people. I don't know. That's just where I'm at the top of my head. What about you?
I mean, I would agree with you. Just sometimes more is not. just because there's more doesn't mean it makes it better. Sometimes less is better. And sometimes, I mean, there's some misinformation from the liberal establishment media, and there's some misinformation on the right as well. And, you know, as a matter of fact, we have this whole generation has been being defined as like the age of spin, where the truth and facts literally get spun into something else to fit a narrative. So we can have a lot of misinformed voters anyway going out there to vote if we have the popular vote. Again,
well, and I hear there's, you know, anyone can start a podcast these days. There's these two kooks on, you know, doing a Bill Me segment every week. You know, people might get misinformed by us. They might go vote. I don't know, Ken. I don't know what kind of reach our podcast gets.
I mean, you just misinformed the audience. Say this is Bill Me, so this is Blueprint.
Oh no, I meant the Bill Me segments that I was talking about. I did not misinform. I was saying that my segments that I started that dive into the bills. Let me fact check the fact checkers here. What I was referring to is I started segments that dove into legislation because people were going off the media. Now, I might have misspoke. You might have misunderstood. I'm not sure which. But just to be clear, that was what I meant. I know I might not be doing my other show, but I can at least keep them separate.
I gotcha. Okay, so another point then, as far as like a weakness of the Electoral College system that people have pointed, that the Electoral College, and I think this is actually probably the most fair argument anyway against the Electoral College, but I would still say it's not worth like dismantling the Electoral College altogether, is the fact that we have, it makes candidates only focus on swing states. Right. Because candidates like, you're not going to see, for example, Donald Trump go to California any more than Joe Biden go to a state like Alabama, for example. And you would want people, you would want candidates to actually like try to earn their votes and everything like that. But because those states in particular are so set in their ideals as far as the role of government, that they're better off that just actually campaigning in those purple states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. I would still call Florida purple-ish, but it's definitely become a darker shade of red in the last 10 years. So I would say it's less of a swing state than it used to be. But I would say that's probably like the strongest argument against the Electoral College. But I would still say even if you get rid of it, it would exacerbate the problems of their concerns anyway, as far as the candidates only would campaign in the swing states. Well, if you get rid of the Electoral College altogether, they're not even going to bother going to the swing states anymore. They're just going to go to like cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, the big cities, the big urban cities at that point. Forget the swing states. Like some swing states don't even have like the population of like of Los Angeles, for example. So why stop there?
Yeah. Well, and I mentioned this before, the trade-off disadvantage, right? We've shifted where you campaign, we didn't shift the issue, right? If the issue is a lack of representation, we just shifted who's not being represented. And so when you're trying to debate a policy change, in debate, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to argue what are the merits. So what are the pros, what are the cons, advantages, disadvantages, if you will. And sure, there are disadvantages to the people who live in swing states if that shifts away, right? Because you'll focus on the big cities. And right now, you see that they're campaigning at swing states instead of big cities. So it's kind of a shift there. So I guess my first way that I would try to address the blanket point there is to point out that we're really just shifting the way things are done. We're not really shifting the good that is being done. And I think that if you're going to change a policy, you need to shift the amount of good that's being done. Now, personally, I would also argue that you're actually seeing a regression in the amount of good being done, because you'll actually see more people who are underrepresented if you switch to the popular vote, because there are fewer big cities than there are swing states. And at least with the swing states, you've got a pretty decent mix of demographics, as opposed to if it shifts. I mean, as a conservative, you should be very wary of switching the power to the popular vote, because the larger cities tend to be bluer. And I'm not saying that this is a roadblock to prevent Democrats from being elected, because Joe Biden being elected demonstrates that that's not, you know, the only roadblock that, you know, politicians face. What right. I'm saying is that it shifts it to where you're looking at just who can get the most people in an area, and that are homogenous in their exports, right? What do cities export? Well, nothing. They just have people, right? Like, I mean, right. There are goods and services, obviously, that come out of those. But if we start shifting all policies and we ignore the more rural areas and what they export, oil, gas, natural gases, as well as crops and food, your sustenance, cost of living will probably go up, I would argue, again. I would also argue that it's going to go up again as we've been seeing this, right? In Joe Biden's policies, they tend to target the more blue areas, which, I mean, he's going to represent his base. That's fine. But what's happening is it's not looking after the interests of other areas. And I think we would see this to an exasperated point. Now, also, I would say, all right, if your goal there is to address the popular vote, I would say, well, what would shift, right? If we, and that's an open-ended question. Feel free to comment below or DM us. What would shift if we hypothetically went over to this? Because what I'm thinking would happen is, sure, you'll see them campaigning in a different area, but you're not fixing the core issue, right? If the core issue is you're not being represented, then all you're doing is you're giving them a different target. You're not changing the policies per se. You're right. Not changing politicians' motivation to maintain power. You're because they are naturally going to go for the biggest bang for their buck. You shift the rules, you change the rules, you're going to shift the outcome, but you're not shifting our core concern. So that's why I would caution people, right? Aside from the disagreement that I have there, I obviously have a motive here to keep it the same. But if we're trying to do a value-based negotiation, what is your value here? What would you like to see changed? If it's more representation, I don't see that being achieved by shifting to the popular vote. You can argue that quote-unquote, the people's voice would be represented, but it again depends on, do we have an agreement on what the people's voice is? Because I believe, as you know, the Constitution was written and why this was set up the way that it was set up, the people's voice is the majority of the United States demographics across the U.S., across all the different areas, rural, city, et cetera, not just the people who are clustered together.
Right.
And I also don't know that, you know, if you're saying, well, they would, I don't know, if the people who live in the big cities, right, tend to be blue anyway, well, then why would we really need to shift that anyway? Like, why? I feel like a politician might also, and this might be a question that doesn't necessarily go towards one side or the other, but something to think about. If they're like, oh, well, you know, Los Angeles is obviously going to vote blue. That's what they prefer. Then why would why would one politician or the other try to campaign for it? So I don't know. I don't know how this would shake out, but I would be inclined to think that yes, you would just be changing the rules of the game, not really the outcome, for a better one for either side.
That's an interesting point to think about, as far as, like, even if you got rid of the electoral college altogether, I mean, what incentive do the candidates, let's say a Democrat, because they tend to vote blue, the big cities anyway, right?
Right.
I don't remember the last time a big city voted red. So let's say blue for now. Fact checkers, correct me if I'm wrong. Anyways. Well, and
yeah, no, you're to my knowledge, you're correct.
Yeah. And so because it's pretty much like a known fact out there, then what incentive do any presidential candidate have to actually campaign those big cities anyway? I mean, honestly, like, if I knew as a Republican that Los Angeles, cities like Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, like, they're going to go blue anyway, why would I bother trying to campaign at all? And then we run the risk of a possible, like, one party rule at that point, which could lead into a dictatorship. And that's the danger of a pure democracy at that point.
It is. Well, let me step on a few toes here. I would caution people against changing the rules because your political candidate wasn't the one who was elected. I know that's a tough pill to swallow, but I would caution both sides. So right now I'm speaking to people who fall more towards the left, the center left, you know, whatever side. And I'm sure that there's probably some conservatives as well who are in favor of changing this. But don't change the rules just because your side isn't winning, because let's take a look at how that historically has worked out. So first and foremost, we had the Democrats decided that when Barack Obama was in office, they didn't have enough of a majority for them to confirm the federal justices, not Supreme Court, but federal justices. So they nuked the filibuster and made it a simple majority, which also carried over to the Supreme Court. It was all federal appointments. Well, then the moment that Republicans got to wield that weapon, and it absolutely cut against what the Democrats wanted, it bit them in the butt. We also saw this with rules such as electors, when your slate of elector goes to confirm your state as for one party or the other, they've now started passing laws in the wake of the 2020 election. Some conservatives jumped ship and they went rogue, as was their, I don't know if it was constitutional right or just their right under their establishment there. Let's go constitutional right to not vote for what their state had represented. Now, do I think they should do that? No, but they were allowed to. And the Democrats have started pushing legislation now that they can't do that. And what they either forget conveniently or maliciously, I'm not sure which, is that when Hillary Clinton lost in 2016, there were Democrats who jumped ship and they voted for Hillary Clinton when their state said they wanted Donald Trump. So this is not a partisan issue is what I'm trying to point out to you, right? Each of these things I'm pointing out is not a partisan issue, but the Democrats are the one who pushed for the radical reshaping of either the social norms or the actual legislative rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a shift, right? And it cuts against them and then they become really upset. So if you're in favor of this, and then, you know, here's what I would predict would happen. You would see more Democrats elected and it would favor them until the policies of Joe Biden and the radical left stop becoming popular and they push the cities red, or at least red enough that they're not voting for what the people who are in favor of this legislation want. And then they're going to be stuck with this new way of doing things. And I don't think it'll sit well for them then either. So anyway, the big point being here, don't vote for a change just to reach your end goal. Think very carefully about when this shifts, because it will. It always shifts.
Right.
Are you going to be happy with the system, or is the system going to be more problematic? Personally, I would think that it'd be more problematic because I think that we would undercut, and it just so happens right now that it coincides with the more conservative values. But if you change it, it's only a matter of time until stuff shifts. Things are not stagnant when you shift the rules this drastically. They're not always going to line up. You might have a couple of election cycles, but it will change because it always changes. Parties always change. You know, areas tend to change. Strongholds tend to remain strongholds, but they'll even shift in how much of a stronghold they are. So big point here being, be very careful going along with something, voting for something, supporting something because you think that it would have had a better outcome, when in reality, it's not necessarily going to be a bigger system that you can stomach. Now, if you can stomach that system, great. Vote your conscience. I encourage you to do so.
And like I said, we run into the risk of a pure democracy. The risk of a pure democracy is a possible dictatorship, one party rule. And that's something that the founding fathers did not want. Yep. And that's why we ended up having a republic instead of a pure democracy, a constitutional republic or representative democracy, same thing, same synonyms, whatever you want to call it. But we don't want that. And state like California, for example, like everyone, once upon a time, they were a solid red state once upon a time. Hmm. During the Nixon, all the way through the Reagan years, they voted red. As a matter of fact, the last time they voted red was actually back in 1992, when George H.W. Bush won the election the first time around. And actually, as far as governorship is concerned, they even voted red when they voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger in 2003. Yep. So states can change. Texas right now, as you were alluding to earlier, as far as like it could still remain a stronghold, but maybe it shifts in the sense of how strong of a stronghold it is. Texas is still a solid red state, but there's been more conversations of Texas being more purplish or turning more blue in the last recent years. Yep. And thus you have some conservatives at least a little worried anyway. I'm not so worried personally because the Texas population has a lot of Hispanics, and Hispanics are going red now. You want to talk about shift, right? Hispanic, like demographics, communities in particular, like they shift votes. They shift as well. So we're seeing Hispanics shift more red. So that's why I have like no real concern about Texas. But I will acknowledge that Texas has become a little bit more blue in recent years, mainly because we have blue residents from states like California moving into Texas and bringing their blue policy or blue ideals with them, not realizing that those ideals are the same ones that destroyed their state and forced them to leave. I digress. Anyways, but then you have like the state like Florida, for example, right? It was more purplish.
Yep.
When I graduated high school in 2015, and now it's become, like I said earlier, it's a more solid red state. It's not so much of a swing state as much anymore as it once was. It's becoming, I would say, a Republican stronghold now. Yep. Probably what, honestly, a lot of people would say Florida is the new Texas. Yep. Because of that.
Well, and everything you're mentioning is the result of coalitions and bedfellows is what that would be. So the coalitions that are formed, there is a coalition. Several election cycles ago, there was not this strong alliance with the LGBTQ community and conservatives, but they have found mutual enemies that they formed coalitions with. And that is part of the reason that this has gone the way that it was. Here's a crazy idea of how both parties can stop getting people to flee from them, right? Because the moment, because it's going to shift and then it overcorrects. So as we shift towards more red, then the crazy reds are going to come out, right? The more fringe people will be emboldened, and then we'll shift back. And this is the pendulum that we keep seeing swinging back and forth, which is why when it's swinging away from your party, the answer is not to go crazy and nuke the system. The answer is to propose more moderate policies. Crazy, right?
Whoa.
Like I know, crazy. At least at the federal level. Right. My ideal here would be that the federal employees, whether it be the president or your U.S. senator's house, they're proposing more moderate things that are more palpable or palatable to everyone. And then, you know what? California wants really blue policies. Do that at the state level. Tennessee wants really red. Do that at the state level. That was the way this was designed. But don't nuke the system because people are running screaming from your party. They're not running screaming from your party because you have a D or an R after your name. They're running because of the policies you choose. So if you see people running away, maybe rethink policies, right? When Republicans, if they want to garner more votes and their more radical policies are not popular, tone it back. When Democrats start seeing the same thing, tone it back. Like I feel like the answer is not to nuke the system. It's less radical policies that are more palatable to more people.
And I think you and I can agree then that as far as keeping electoral college as a whole should be kept, the national popular vote would exacerbate the flaws of what we already see with the electoral college.
Yep.
I think at least for this episode, we can finish on that as far as the agreement, and we'll give you guys a little springboard for next week. And so, Ryan, what flaws do you have with the Electoral College as a whole? Because we both acknowledge there are flaws with Electoral College, and I mentioned earlier as far as the whole swing state flaw, like the presidential campaign only campaign in swing states, and thus, you know. Really, it's really an election of swing states, really.
Yep.
And I would venture to say that even as we've been talking about big cities, right? I still think big cities have too much powers within the state as far as how, like, I don't think it's fair that a state like Illinois, Chicago pretty much decides a whole election for, at least when it comes to the federal election anyway, they pretty much decide which way the vote goes electoral system-wise.
I think that my big issue that I would point out is there is a problem that comes when there is a cognitive dissonance between the popular vote as representation versus the electoral vote as representation. I think that if we could find a way to make those a little closer together without that big dissonance between the two, that it would be better not just for the health and well-being of the election system. I think that it would also take away the fodder that that politicians have in their election cycle to focus on that as a, which it's a non-issue, right? Like the big issue is your dumb policies of all politicians everywhere. It's not the system itself, in my opinion. So I think that, you know, the issue of the electoral system being so distant, right? Because they can look to it and say, well, we're not representing the will of the people. And then the other side says, well, you're not representing the will of the people. I think if we can make that a little bit more congruent with each other, then it would force politicians to actually focus on doing their damn job. So that's why I would say that's an issue. But
I'd also include in there anyway. So kind of going back to the swing state argument real quick, for the states that are not swing states, it allows the at least parties anyway, who have that stronghold, to pass more, perhaps what the average voter would consider to be more radical legislation in particular. So a state like California could pass a proposed bill right now that could be passed that would allow basically the killing of children past birth. And they still call it an abortion, air quote. And then you have like a state, like, I don't know, let's say hypothetically, Kentucky decided to go ahead and pass the stage to where the people wanted to could buy tanks. The average voter would probably think that's a little extreme. But because those are strongholds, and that's the part that continually gets elected, they can get away with it, I feel like, to an extent anyway. And you can make the argument that it is the voters' responsibility to vote these people out, especially when it comes to primaries. We can make that argument. But for the most part, going back to the whole educational aspect, why we had electoral college to begin with, most people either just don't care about politics, they don't care to look, they just kind of associate as far as voting wise, basically based on whether they have the R, I can't do the R with my hands, or the D. And so I agree with you. There's got to be something to where, like, the two worlds, like, come closer together, and there's more, it forces candidates and politicians, leaders anyway, public servants become more moderate and policymaking wise. And I would also venture to say that with the popular vote within the states, let's say again, a state like Illinois, the smaller counties in Illinois, a lot of people will probably feel discouraged because they know, or they feel as though their vote will be drowned out by the people of Chicago. So a lot of them don't even bother voting to begin with. And I personally want to create a system to where the little guy essentially gets incentivized and gets emboldened because to vote, because they feel as though they have a chance to have their voice heard, or a better shot at having their voice heard.
Makes sense to me.
All right. Well, that's a foreshadow of what's next week's to come. I have some proposed changes to the electoral college system. And I guess I'll go ahead and finish off by asking you, do you think there should be some changes in electoral college by itself?
I'm open to it. I will probably stand more by the status quo than anything else. I'm sure that some of your proposals, I'll be like, all right, I can, even if I have to tweak it a little bit to be in favor of it. But generally, I would say I think that even just going back to, you know, the little guy not being represented, I'd say, well, again, someone will always not feel represented. So I don't think that, you know, there's much we can do that will create a significant shift towards a positive change. And there I am sounding pessimistic, but not with the full on gunning. So I'm interested to talk with you about the nuances that you'll bring. Not saying I'll be opposed to them, but I have very few proposals myself, if any.
Making me sound more liberal in this case then. So that'll be interesting, folks. Folks, make sure to hit the like and subscribe button on this YouTube channel for Taboo Topic and Between the Liars. Hit the like button, hit the notification bell. Most of us don't do it, but again, help our self-esteem out, boost our self-esteem by hitting the notification bell. And lets us know that you love us and you think we're creating great content for you. And also helps us beat the algorithm, because let's be honest, we are conservative voices and the algorithm does not like our voices to be pushed out there for the audience to hear. So if you think this is something that people need to hear more, and you want a blueprint, an actual visual, what it means when a conservative talks about a smaller government, whether you're conservative that has no idea, or you're a liberal, you're just curious as far as what it means when a conservative talks about having a smaller government, at least with Ryan and I, you have an idea. So Ryan, if you wouldn't mind closing this out.
Sure. All right. Remember, you can find us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, Twitch, and Google Podcasts. Follow our social medias to stay updated at Kenjin_Express and at Between the Liars. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star review and share us with your friends. Ken said it best. Subscribe to our channels. Help us envision a smaller, better, more accountable government. And that starts with the blueprint. We'll catch you back here next week.